Press's Tool Shed.
Welcome from Pensacola. Your original settlement in America. Hey, how you doing? Hey, that's a book. There you go. Tool Shed. Hey, how you all doing here? All right. We're at the Visual Studio T-shirt right here. All right, you got that, baby. Press's T-shirt. Welcome, everybody. We have a great show lined up for you here today. Stan, how you doing today? All right?
I'm fine. I'm happy to be in Pensacola.
Oh, this is a beautiful place, isn't it?
I've actually
got a nice snapshot. I went out to Virtual Earth, and now this is actually from Bing.com. It looks very, very similar to the beach area right down here. But if I take a look at this map, this... anybody recognize that scene here in the audience? Yeah, that's the beach, right? That's the best place to be. There's that water tower is actually looks like a little like a beach ball, and that bar right there, that's my favorite bar. I love going to that one all the time. And then to the left of that is the pier, of course, down at Pensacola Beach. Just a beautiful white sand and gorgeous blue water. There's the water right there coming up. Great place. You can actually stand on the beach there and watch the sunrise and set from the same exact location. It's just amazing. So some really good stuff there in terms of where we're at for our venue here today. And I want to thank everybody for coming. We have an excellent show lined up, so let's go ahead and get right to it. And before we do that, Stan, I know we always talk about tools and how important they are, and I think everybody here in the crowd gets it. You know, having the right tool to do your job is a very important thing, right? Because you don't waste time doing it. But I thought we'd just do something a little bit different here today. Tell our favorite demo story, all right? So I'll start, because this show is all about demos, right? And then you can go ahead and follow up with one. My favorite demo was basically I was up at an event up in Boston at a Bob and Larry developer seminar. This was years ago when Bob Familiar was doing sessions for developers and Larry Barnes. And Bob is doing a session. It's at the Heinz Convention Center. There's curtains behind the stage, and the guy in the front row goes, "Bob, can you do something about that bright light behind you? Man, it's blinding me." And so Bob, like, you know, moves the curtain over, checks it out. He goes, "Sir, I know you don't get out much, but that's the sun." And so is that typical for a developer or what, right? You're always inside. And, so I thought that was a pretty good demo story. How about you?
Well, it brings to mind the second webcast that Russ and I did. We've done probably 20 different MSDN webcasts together, but we went down to Fort Lauderdale to the Microsoft office. So we had the DE and the MVP are going to do a webcast now, and we couldn't get the AV guy out of the back to help with my network connection. For some reason, he just wouldn't come out, and then finally Russ went and sort of brought him out by the collar about 30 minutes before we were to start, at which time he let us know that I was not going to get internet access in the Microsoft office. It wasn't going to happen. So we were kind of stuck. 30 minutes before start, we had, I don't know, 250 people online in the audience or something like that. So virtual PC to the rescue. I had my whole presentation sitting on a VPC. I just plugged into his machine. We had a little doctoring to do to make everything work exactly right, but we ended up starting about 3 minutes late, as it turns out, once we got everything turn back around, so that
pulled it off. It's not so much how you do your demo when it's right; it's how you recover from failure, right? That's more important sometimes.
having backup three ways from Sunday too, you know, having different ways that you can do the same thing.
All right, so let's get our special guest up here, Jessica and Don. Why don't you both come on in here and give it up for them? Really excited to have both of these folks here with us today. They are Microsoft MVPs. So how about a big round of applause for that as well? Jessica, you are incredible. We did a dry run this week. You're going to love her session she's doing. I just want to tell the folks just a few words and a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. My name is Jessica Moss. I'm a business intelligence mentor with Solid Quality Mentors, Microsoft SQL Server MVP, GoSQL Server. That's me. We're going to do a great demo today, and I'm really looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you very much. Round of applause there.
That's Don also. Here's to Don.
All right. And Don XML.
Yes, Don Debsec, DonXML.com. I'm a Microsoft MVP and Ineta Speakers Bureau member. I actually came out here thanks to Ineta to speak at the Pensacola SQL Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I just recently joined Talago, which is a MVP consulting firm of other MVPs.
Cool.
And actually been working right now down in South Florida.
Nice.
At least for the summer.
So you like that beach scene, I showed.
Oh, can't
play. Okay, round of applause. All right, we'll bring you guys back up later in the show, and look forward to hearing from you. Yeah, go ahead, Stan. You can say a few words about yourself as well.
So Stan Schultes, I'm from Sarasota. I run the Sarasota Dev Group down there. I actually have a real full-time job. I work for a small manufacturing company where I write engineering design automation software. So I do real coding every single day. I live in Visual Studio and use all the tools that we talk about here. It's a great job, and do quite a bit of community stuff, speaking, talking at launch events. Just came out with a chapters in a book that I co-wrote on .NET Nuke, and having a lot of fun in the community.
That's it. He does a lot for the community. Big round of applause for Stan Schultes, my co-host. And as Jessica got the big roar for SQL Server, of course, we are at a SQL Saturday here in Pensacola. And I'd like to give special thanks to both Pensacola Junior College here at the main campus and the SQL Saturday Pensacola 2019, especially Carla Remail. Big round of applause for Okay, a little bit more on Jessica. She's got a great blog. If you get a chance, go out to jessicamoss.com. Some really great videos she has put together. She's had some open source projects as well, given out to the community up on Coplex. Several presentations you could see there as well she's done, so she's been very involved in the community. And then Don, I'm very happy to have him here as well here today. He's a solution architect, as he mentioned, at Talago, all the MVPs in that consulting group. Done a lot for the community as well, and there are his blogs and Twitters and open source project links as well. So once again, a nice round of applause for those folks, and we can go ahead and get started. So it's all about the tools, and the secret here is picking the right tool for the job, right? That's going to save you a lot of time, and what we typically have are challenges every time in the developer world when we're doing applications and creating applications, or in the database world as well, database professionals and challenges that we all have. So these are some of the challenges we're going to cover here today. First one is finding a XAML editor for your web page. Now, XAML has become more and more important in terms of Silverlight applications. Also, WPF applications use XAML. So wouldn't it be nice to have a great tool, right, to go ahead and do that for you in a WYSIWYG manner with very little coding effort whatsoever. So we'll talk about that as well as a sneak peek at a really great prototyping tool for great design for your website. So we're going to take a look at something which is actually brand new and the bits aren't publicly available yet. So I got an internal build to show you on this, and we're going to have a lot of fun with that particular product. How many people here do web application development? Any show of hands? Mostly back-end folks, but we do have a lot of web developers here at SQL Saturday. How about that? I'm pretty surprised at that. That's great. I know it is how it is, right? You got to wear a lot of hats a lot of times, right? Do a lot of different things. And many times you need authentication. Anybody need to log in or log out on your web applications? Show of hands? Mm-hmm. Okay. A good number of you as well. So we'll take a look at some tools to help you do that. Some of my web pages on my website, those that are doing, web apps, I'm running slowly. How come it's running slowly? What is the problem here? So maybe you need a tool to help analyze that a little bit better. And then we have you ever eyeballed every record in your table, right? Everybody here probably has done that in this group because you're all database.
Trying to profile your data.
I will ask that question anyway with a show of hands. If you ever have a problem in your database and you're really trying to think, man, it's got to be the data. There's something wrong with the data. How many people have actually eyeballed the records in their database? Show of hands. Look at that. It's incredible. It's old. That'll give you a headache, right there. And so we're going to see what Jessica has up her sleeves for that particular demo. Let's go and show you some of the solutions, right, to these challenges. And the first one is Expression Blend. We're going to cover Expression Blend 2.0 here, and we're going to show you how to start up, create a project, and do something very simple like show a video in Expression Blend, which is the 2.0 is the released version. The download site you can see there is Microsoft.com Expression. And then sample problems it solves, once again, is XAML code generation. It does that for you automatically, all the storyboard tags and everything automatically through animations that you can do. Installation notes. You have to install the Service Pack 1 for Expression Blend, in addition to the Visual Studio Service Pack 1 for Blend 2 as well, because then you will have support for Silverlight 2.0, which is released to the web as final as well. So those two service packs will get you there for that type of support. So let's go ahead and get going and show you our first demo. Okay, so we have Expression Blend 2. The first thing we're going to do is start up a new project. And you'll see that there are several different types, everything from Silverlight 1. You got WCF applications as well. We're going to go ahead and do a Silverlight 2 app here today. Just go ahead and get it very started very easily. And we'll also show you, as part of this demo, integration with Visual Studio and how nicely back and forth these two products work together. So we have a new project here that's coming up, and you'll see it come up in the Solution Explorer, very similar to Visual Studio for those that have worked with VS. And first thing we're going to do here is we're going to go ahead and try to take a look at the asset gallery here and put some a video onto the screen. So you notice I've got local styles, media, custom controls. These are regular controls you can use. Let's go to media, and you can see there's nothing here. And what it says there is basically you got to add a media file into your application, and then you'll see it appear on this particular page. So let's go ahead and do that. I'm going to go ahead and add an existing item. I'll go out to our Bear Video page, famous Bear Video that comes with every machine, and there it is now in our application. So I can go ahead and draw that, and then once I go ahead and press 5 and run this application, it's going to go ahead and build this, and it's going to bring up our localhost browser, our local browser, and now you'll see just like that, now you have created a video and a website application, right? So this is a very another common need right here, another common challenge itself. Within seconds, you're able to go ahead and start showing videos up on the screen. So it gets better, right? So now we'll take that same application, and we're going to start putting in a storyboard. I'm going to bring up my animation workspace. So what we're going to do here is add a storyboard into our application, and note the name here, Storyboard 1. And where we're going with this demo is we're going to do a little spin on the video here. We're going to grab one of the corners. We'll move the marker out to, say, 2 seconds. So at 2 seconds, we're going to go ahead and do a little rotate and move it down. And maybe out at 4 seconds, we'll go ahead and take this and slide it over a little bit. So now if I go ahead and play this out in the browser, you can see it actually spinning and sliding over. Now if I press F5 to go ahead and run this application, what you're going to see is it's going to bring it up, but it's just going to stay still. And that's because where we're working in Expression Blend is just a viewer, basically, for that animation. To get this to actually work, you need a little bit of code, right, to do a begin method call on that storyboard to go ahead and let it fire up and run. All right, so now what I'm going to do is go over to Visual Studio. And the way you do that is just right mouse click on there and say Edit in Visual Studio. So go ahead and bring up the Visual Studio environment. And by the way, if you need to start Expression with administrative rights, if you want to pop back and forth to Visual Studio, because you need to have that for Visual Studio.
That's if you're working in Vista.
That's correct, in Vista. Yep, thank you. And so what I'm going to do here is go into the code for the code behind this particular page. Let's go into the page load event, for example. And the thing I want to point out here is the name that we had over in the XAML. I'll just point it out right here. And you can see it right here. It creates the storyboard tag sequence, but the name is the very important thing here. That is the name that you refer to inside of the code for that particular object. Coming back over to Visual Studio then, what we'll do here is we'll just type in storyboard1.begin. and make that a function call. So now when I go run this application, what we'll see here is the actual animation taking place. And so here it comes up, and there it is, spinning, coming across the page. How about that? Pretty nice. And we're going to talk about expression 3.0, blend 3.0. Now this is going to be right around the corner. There's already a preview of this up on the web. And I asked Bill Reese the other day, he's a Silverlight MPP, what he thought the top three new features were in Expression 3 Blend. Sketchflow, he said number one, and that's what we're going to do a demo on as part of the 3.0 session that I'll show you next. And it changes the game, these are his words exactly, changes the game when it comes to the designers becoming an integrated part of the development process. And you'll see exactly what I mean when I demo this, because you can map out an entire site all at once to go ahead and architect your site basically from a front-end standpoint. It's a beautiful thing. I've never ever seen anything like this in the developer space, all right? Secondly, behaviors, right? You can attach behaviors to visual elements to make them behave a certain way, such as drag and drops. And finally, Photoshop and Illustrator, direct import, right? So you got some nice incredible features there in the 3.0 blend. And what is it? Basically, Sketchflow then is a set of features targeted at making it easier and faster to design and communicate and really review these prototypes in a very interactive way. Some problems it solved, you know, it provides like a whiteboard kind of approach to doing your app diagram and your application design. Similar to PowerPoint, sometimes you might do PowerPoints for prototyping, but the problem with PowerPoints, it's linear, right? You go from one to the next and the next. What happens if you branch off and you have multiple choices? That's where kind of doing a prototype through PowerPoint would kind of fall down a little bit. So you'll see here that you can do all this branching. There's a great viewer that will show you on doing this as well. All right, so the preview that's up there, once again, does not have the Sketchflow bits in it. But once again, the final release, the 3.0 release is just around the corner. That's all I can say. Okay, I can't give you a date, but it's just around the corner. So here's our Expression Blend 3.0 preview with the special bits for doing Sketchflow. So once again, designers need great tools as well as developers do production, but also in the earlier phases of the design process. And that's just where prototyping comes in. And so what we're going to do is start up a new project here. And now you see a new option here called Sketchflow, both for WPF and Silverlight. So last time we did a Silverlight demo in 2.0, this time we'll do a WPF. All right, so this will be our application here for Sketchflow. Let's just keep all the default names. And once this comes up, we're going to have a very nice flow diagram here to work with to start doing our first prototype. So with this, what we'll see here is under the window, we're going to go ahead and bring up the Sketchflow map. Now these names may change by the time the bits come out final, but you basically what you'll have is a starting point here for the flow of our process. So you can see here I've got the start node, and I can do something very simple here, just like throw a text block on, for example, bring up the fonts. We'll go ahead and change the font here to kind of a Sketchflow print, bigger fonts, go to 22. And what would be a developer session without doing a hello world example. So we have that. Now if I go ahead and just press F5, this thing will go ahead and build and spit it up and put it on the screen. So far, not much difference, right, between what we've seen in Expression 2 Blend and Expression 3. But now what will happen is there's our viewer, right, that we have. So this is new, right? We haven't seen this before. There's actually a viewer here where you can start looking through your different panels. What I'm going to do now is start building a little bit of a flow here to this application. And in order to do this, if we come down, you can see down below now, you get a little bit of a drop down here. And that's your, what they call that, an on-object UI control, or OOUI, another acronym for everybody to learn. And that just keeps everybody gainfully employed, you know, just knowing all those acronyms all the time. So let's go ahead and create a new navigation screen. So what we can do here is basically, now I've got a new navigation screen, and there it is, right? And they just drag it down, and there's another screen in our process. So what I could do here is on this screen, I can go ahead and start putting in, you know, any kind of controls I want to. Let's put like a rectangle here. Maybe let's go ahead and draw, you know, maybe some buttons, a couple buttons on here. Let's put, maybe a grid, you know, control over here, something like that. And come up with kind of a rough design for our page that we're working with. And now if I go ahead and press F5 and run this, we'll see that I've got two screens in our setup. So there's the start screen and there's screen one. So I click on screen one, up it comes. Now what's nice about this is I can go ahead and annotate this, right? And I can go ahead and put in feedback. You know, this is way cool. Right?
So like if you had like somebody reviewing your design, they would be using the annotation tools.
That's right. And then also, not only that, you can mark up the page. So I can go ahead and bring up a little marker, say, you know, no, you know, we don't need that, right? Or if I highlight this part here, this is like, this is great, you know, right here is what I want to do. So you have a way of going ahead and marking this particular screen up right on the fly. You like that? So far, so good?
Just getting warmed up.
Here we go again. I love saying that. Okay. So next thing we'll do is kind of build more of a flow to this, right? So I'm going to have a few more screens come out here, maybe branch off, right? A couple different screens out that way. And we can go ahead and, you know, make our separate branches. Now you can kind of see how the architect piece of this works, right? And I've never seen anything like this myself from a developer standpoint. There might be some designer tools out there that do this, but I'm telling you, I'm pretty excited about this. You know, and a lot of the folks that saw this at the Mixed keynote, they were just raving about this, you know, particular feature of Silverlight 3.0 Blend. All right, so let's take this a little bit further and start doing show you in the navigation panel a little bit, and after we a little bit more about the flow and what we can do here, we'll talk about states next and the use of the visual state manager. Now the visual state manager is something that came out in 2.0, and this literally basically allows you to create various states or looks of your application at points in time. For example, maybe you hover over a mouse, it turns over a button, it turns a certain color. That's a state. And what you can do is map out or kind of prototype what these different states look like. So let's go ahead and try that out. So I am on currently screen number, let's go out to screen three here. All right, we'll do our states on here. So we'll go ahead and add in a state group first of all, and then we'll call the screen red, and we'll add one more. And we'll call this next one green. Spell it right, now to help. And we'll come back over to the red here, and let's go ahead and bring up the color properties for it. All right. So there we have a red state, and then on the green page, let's go ahead and put a green kind of a look to it in there as well. All right, so we have a red state and a green state. So let's go ahead and build this. And now what we'll see is when we bring up the viewer, the prototype viewer, we'll go ahead and click on our screen one. And we're going to go to screen three. And now you notice there are two states there listed, a green state and a red state. And there they are, the two right there. So green, and then you come down to red. So now you can see the different states as you're doing an application and what it's supposed to look like at that point in time. How about that? Pretty nice? Okay.
So what you're going to do with that then is you're going to assign those state changes to an event of some sort, like a mouse over, during when the application is actually executing, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly, you know, how that is intended to work. The other thing you can do is you can create components here. So the green object here is a component. Now you can see that's used by components 5 and 6 and 5 are components that are going to be used in screen 3. So for example, if you had a navigation bar component that you created, so you bring up the screen here, and you paint in all your buttons, and you highlight it, and you can just right mouse click on it and say make component. That component now is available throughout the other screens as well. So a lot of really great things.
Or a dialogue or something like
that.
Or
a dialogue, yeah, or login dialogue. Maybe you need that in different places. And So some really great stuff here with this particular application. How about that? Pretty nice. You said you had one more question there, Stan?
So the tool really is used then for prototyping out an application so that you can show it to your customer, and the customer can see what it looks like and how it's going to operate without there actually being any functionality behind it then, right?
Yeah, because think of what you had to do. How many people started out with, say, Visual Basic or C#? Any showing hands here, doing some coding? I mean, anytime you did a prototype there, you had a click button. What did you have to do? You had to go behind the click button, put some code, say, okay, I'm going to navigate out to this screen next. That was a pain, right, to do that. With here, you don't have to worry about any of that. You know, this is gives you the list. It gives you the navigation built right in the viewer. So it really will speed up any kind of prototyping that you have to do. So do you have a question over there?
Yes. Is there a way to be able to view the screens you just showed without actually having Expression Blend so that you could package it up and send it to a customer so they could actually review it online or something like that?
So the answer is yes, you can do that. In fact, they actually demoed it at MIX. I think, John, I think you saw it at MIX. You want to talk about that particular demo?
Sure. All the MIX videos are online. You can go over and watch the MIX video. But specifically, the issue is you're the designer. You've done the prototype. You want to give it to the client and let the client mark it up. You can package it up, send it to the client, email it to the client, or put it up on your test server, either one. Client can then take it, and it's interactive. They can go through and try the different buttons and do the different things. Further, the client can mark it up with the markup tool. You know, like strike through and say no, or change this to red, or change this to blue. Email it back to you, and you have captured there all the client's things, so that then you can continue to work on the project.
All right, thanks, John. That's great. All right, so that's our demo on Expression 3. Our next demo here is Windows Live ID, and that is all based on authentication. And anytime you need to have a login or log out for your application, this is a great free service that's offered up through our live services. We have done many demos on live services, Stan, throughout
sure
the episodes.
Have.
We got some more coming up in future episodes. Dev.live.com is the site to go to. And basically, there's already millions of Passport or now it's Live ID users out there. So why not take advantage of that in your application and do your authentication? So this is what we're going to show you right now and how to go about doing it. Let me go ahead and bring up our dev.live.com. And now you see the page where you get started doing this. And under services, you would go down to the Windows Live ID. And under Live ID, you see you have different types of authentication. Not just web-based authentication, but you can also integrate this through delegated authentication or client authentication as well. What I'm going to demo here is the web-based authentication. So we'll go ahead and click on that and bring up our page. And what this does is bring you a page where you can download all these different types of samples in different languages, everything from Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby, VB, C#. Let's go ahead. I clicked on the VB download, and that's what I'm going to show you next. Also, what you might want to do is take a look at the documentation after you've done the download, and there's a web authentication documentation page here, and take a look at the quick start samples for web authentication. Now, this gives you a really nice step-by-step view of what's going on in how to go about installing it. And there are four easy steps. You just run the MSI file, you download it, you copy the files out to this web auth directory under your root. And by the way, just a note, it downloads as web auth VB. Rename that just to web auth so the demos work. A little bit of pain. I'll save it there on that one. And copy that under the root. Then also you create an app code directory under your root, and then copy this file here, Windows Live Login.vb, to that directory. Now I've got an application ready to go to show you this. So let's go ahead and bring that up, and what we'll see is this exact demo. And here it is, my web authentication demo. And let me just run this first so you can see this executing, and then we'll take a look at some of the code behind this. So this has got a hard-coded application ID. When you go to use this for your application, you have to register your application. You'll receive an application ID. Then you would just plug that into your code and use that. So here's the demo for signing in. I'll go ahead and sign in. I'll use my rfestino@microsoft.com. It's going to go ahead and sign into my page. There you see it come back with the user ID token, right? So that's consistent for that particular user. And so you would just use that in your database, perhaps as a key for membership purposes, right? And then you can go ahead and store profile information about that particular user. Let's go ahead and sign back out. Now, not only does it support passwords, but also there's a little drop-down under here. Information card. Has anybody here used information card? Show of hands. Not many. This is a couple of you have. This is a little known secret. It came out actually with Vista, and it's under the control panel where you can go ahead and create your information cards. And you notice the background got all grayed out or in black. That's because it brought up a new instance of a desktop. And it's more secure that way. You can't do scripting from underneath. So it's a secure way of doing it. It's just like an analogy is you have a card in your wallet to provide an identification. That's kind of like what information card is in the digital world. I've created a couple cards here. I'll go ahead and send out the one I've created out to the site. And now I'm logged in the same way. How about that? Pretty nice? And the code is pretty straightforward. We have a question over here.
Uses decentralized, like you would with OpenID, where you can take something and set it at your pace. You're not dependent on their service being up or anything like that.
All right, the OpenID area, I've limited experience with myself, but Don has a comment on that. You can go ahead and answer that, Don.
At the PDC 08 last year, they announced that LiveID will be a provider for OpenID. Mm-hmm. At that time, they had a beta program, but I don't know what the state is at this time other than they announced that they were doing a beta. I don't know when it's going live, but it's only going to be a provider. So, unfortunately, you're still going to be tied to Microsoft. You would have to use their services. You couldn't decentralize it and have LiveID use Facebook or somebody at MySpace or somebody else's OpenID. At least that's what they announced at the PDC. But at some point in time, hopefully, they'll open it up a little bit more.
All right, thank you very much, Don. A community event here. Round of applause for that. Okay, what we have here is the actual ASPX page, the default page I showed you. And there you can see there's the source for the call out to the web service for authentication. Then you can see where the app ID would go, all right, that you would receive from registering your application. And down below, this is where it goes ahead and clicks you are in and displays the information. So what we'll do here is take a look at the code behind this in the default page is pretty straightforward. And what we'll see here is the fact that it's got the app ID coming in. And it's going to go ahead and take a look and see if there is something in that token that comes back from the call. If it is, it goes and populates the user ID, which is end up getting populated on the screen that you saw. The code that they provide you, the Windows login live, is very, very robust. And you can actually see many functions. You take a look at this drop-down list here. Get application login URL. Get application security token. Get login URL. This is all grunt work code that a developer would normally have to do any kind of authentication. And these are just calls and functions that are already provided for you. Did I mention free of charge? Mm-hmm. Up on our site for dev.live.com. How about that for Live ID then? Okay, so we have our next topic here on Internet Explorer 8 developer tools. There are many great features on IE8, but we're going to just focus on a small portion of that, which are some of the built-in dev tools. And Stan, why don't you go ahead and take it away and describe the slide here, and then go ahead and hop me to your demo.
Great. So developer tools in IE8 are built in now. There was a prior version called the IE7 developer toolbar that you can download. So if you're using IE7, you can still download that component prior, but there's been quite a few enhancements to it in 8. So it's a built-in web page structure analysis. debugging and profiling tool for JavaScript. All right, there's a lot of stuff built in here, and as you'll see in the demo, it's like a Swiss Army knife of development tools. So there's no download required. It's built right into IE8. You start it using F12, and F12 also stops it, and it's by tab. Okay, so you can do page source analysis, you know, actually take a look at how your pages are built and walk through them in detail. Styles, CSS, attribute tracing, you can actually figure out why something looks the way that it looks on the page, actually look through the hierarchy of style application and see what's going on. And as I said, JavaScript profiling and also debug. You can actually set breakpoints and step through your JavaScript now. So the usage notes, there's a pin unpin. I'll show that here in the demo. You can select an element by click. Those are probably the most commonly used features. And there's on the IE8 blog, there's a bunch of tutorials listed as to how you can actually walk through and use this thing. All right, so here we have my browser up, and I'm pointing at the IE8 Explorer 8 on MSDN. So this is where you can get quite a bit of information about the developer tools themselves. I'm just going to use this as a demo page. So you can either go to the Tools menu, and you can click the Developer Tools item, or you can just press F12 to run the Developer Tools. So it's come up in its own window now. All right, so you can maximize this thing you want, and you can click the icon to pin it into the window itself, and it appears down at the bottom of the page here. And once you have it pinned, there's also a minimize mode now, where you can minimize it to just the toolbar at the very bottom, so you can use the menu items, and you can also get to these compatibility mode buttons that are down here. All right, so I'm going to bring it back up, and what we're going to do then is we're going to walk through some of the functionality that we have in the tool, all right, how they're organized. So they're in the main view, we can see that in the left-hand pane, it's the HTML DOM is being shown here. So I can actually browse out through this and look at the structure of my page and just keep dropping down through it until I find the thing that I'm looking for. Or I can actually use a function here called select element by click, which is this pointer icon on the left here. And once I choose that, you'll see that when I start navigating around the page, different parts of the page will highlight themselves. So if I pick one of these, like this one right here, and click on it, in the DOM window then will jump to that portion of the HTML DOM so I can actually see what's going on there. And if I just click on the elements above and below, you can see how the highlighting actually changes on the page as well. So you can go both directions. You can either click on the page or you can click inside the DOM and see what's selected. So you can always, you know, see the correspondence between the code itself and what's on the page. Now, it is important to know that the HTML that's being shown here is IE's representation of what's on the screen. It's not actually the source code of your page. It's what IE sees internally. It's the IE representation of your page. Okay? So, on the right-hand side, then, you'll see that there are some tabs. And we can see the styles that are being applied to this particular page here. And this styling over here is actually the things that are higher in preference are toward the bottom of the page. So you'll see that there are some cross-throughs, like here the font family is crossed through above because it's actually applied right here in the MSDN page body. So you can see the actual styling that's applied and where it comes from, okay? And you can actually uncheck some of these if you want to, and you can change. You can see that the page above will change a little bit depending on which styles are being applied currently, all right? And on the Find menu, I can undo all if I want to get it back to the way that it started. So I can always kind of get back to the way the page is supposed to look. There's a couple of other tabs here. As we're looking at the document view, let me select that item again. Okay, we can see that as well as a style view, there's a trace styles view. And what that does is it actually shows the properties themselves still in precedence order. You see that these things will pop open, and we can look down through the information that's listed under each of the properties and see where they come from over here through these links. On the layout tab, then, we can see that the actual layout of elements on the page is shown. So the one that I have selected right now, we can see in the center the size of that element, 444 by 459. Outside of that, we can see the padding. There's a border out beyond that, a margin, which is the dark blue, and then finally an offset on the outside. And one of the really cool things about these windows over here is that they're editable. If I actually click on this, I can change the padding, say, to 30. When I hit enter, you can see that it actually moved down the element just a little bit.
How about that? Isn't that nice? Yeah. That's cool, huh?
So you get the ability to fully interactively change the way your page is structured and see directly the effects of those changes that you're making. So you can use this to tune your page or to troubleshoot your page if you're looking, you know, you're trying to figure out why it doesn't quite look the way that it looks. I meant to mention at the very beginning, in fact, I found this tool originally because I was doing some skinning on a website and I just couldn't get the elements on the page to look right. I had some style inheritance problem. I couldn't figure out, you know, that the text was the wrong font or something like that. And I just did a little bit of searching and found this IE Developer Toolbar in IE7. And I saved myself probably a couple of hours of decomposing a page and putting debug into it and dumping out debug and, you know, figuring out by running this tool, it actually took me a couple of minutes to solve the problem that I actually had, figure out what was going on and fixed it right away. So the tool is just invaluable. One more tab over here, and that's the attributes tab when we're in HTML view. And you can see that the actual attribute values, and again, you can change these values live here, or you can actually change them in the HTML view on the left-hand side. So you can change these things anywhere you go. All right, the next tab then is CSS. And if I go back to the style, in fact, if I want to find maybe I'm looking for this Boston postcard element, okay, and it's actually defined in this VBasic dash, so if I click on this link over here, it'll actually pop me into the CSS tab, and you can actually see the full source of that CSS file that's in effect. And I can, again, enable or disable elements here on this page and look at the effects of those and change them here. And in fact, I can save now, in this version of the tools, I can save my changes out to a text file. It goes to a text file, not a page source file, because you don't want to inadvertently overwrite your page source. So it saves it to a text file so you can go back later offline and integrate any changes that you made that you want to save into your actual page source. Okay. And you'll notice that the search box here is kind of is context sensitive. If I'm on the HTML tag, it's searching HTML. And it uses the W3C selectors API syntax. So if I click in here, I can type an @ and then look at like a div, div tag. When I hit enter, what it does is it selects every single div tag in my source code over here.
And also up on top, notice it's all highlighted as well on the page.
Yep.
How about that?
And I can do things like then type a class name, like dot nav page, and when I hit enter, it'll find where that nav page class is defined, or I can do the same thing for IDs on the page as well using the pound syntax. Okay. Now, before I go onto the script and profiler, let me talk about what's on the toolbar for just a second. So, as I showed on the Find toolbar, there's an Undo All, there's a Customize Internet Explorer view source, so you can actually change which application is used to pop up your view. So it's actually giving you access here in the toolbar to a lot of Internet Explorer's options and modes so that you can switch them directly. Okay? There's a Find, so I can do the select element by click, which I already used down below. I can disable scripting, pop-up blocker, CSS on the page, so I can actually look at my page without CSS applied to it and see what it would look like maybe in a down-level browser or some application that didn't support CSS. And then on the view menu, I can actually show, if I click that, I can look at the class and ID information gets highlighted on the page. And as you mouse over each of these things, it'll actually pop up and highlight, you know, what exactly is going on there. All right, so it actually will go through and find every single class and ID and highlight them on the page for you. As well, there's a link paths. It'll show the paths of every link, give you a link report, you know, so you can find broken links on your page or whatever. And in the outline view, so this is probably the killer one here. So how many times have you gone into a page in troubleshooting mode and you've added border equals one on a table and you've resaved your, you know, refreshed your page so you just see where your element lies on the page? Well, I can go down now, say, to my tables or my div elements or something. And when I click that, you can see that it highlights the div elements in green here. So I can actually see where each div is and see how they're nested and see what the actual hierarchy of things on the page is so that I can understand the layout of it much better.
Sweet.
As well, I can do the same thing for images. It'll highlight every image. I can search for any element. Maybe I want to find the anchor tags on the page. I can go searching for those. Position objects, relative, absolute. You can actually find, you know, how things are laid out. All right, on the Images tab then, I can disable images, I can show their dimensions, the file sizes, the paths. I don't have to go now spelunking down through the pages, looking, you know, looking through the directories in my website, looking for where the images lie. I can just highlight them directly on the screen here and see right where they are. I can turn caching, clear the cache for the browser. I can clear my session cookies right from here. I can resize my screen to a known size, which is kind of hard to do guessing, but you can actually see what it looks like in any given size. There's a ruler that can come up so you can measure elements on the page. There's a color picker, a magnifier, you know, a bunch of little tools. And possibly the most useful is this validation tab. If you're in an environment where you have to become, you know, you have to, your pages have to be accessible, you know, like section 508 accessible, and you can actually run these reports on the page. Okay, and this is by page. It actually will send your page URL out to an analysis program, which will come back with a very detailed report of what's going on in your page. And then these last two buttons are to change your browser mode. Now IE8 has these new browser compatibility views, so you can set to Internet Explorer 7, 8, or the 8 compatibility view, and this actually changes the user agent string that goes out in the browser, so that, you know, when the pages detect what kind of browser it is and they're throwing different HTML to you, so you can change the way that your pages get rendered based on which compatibility mode you choose right here. And there's also a document mode, which is like the doc type definition in the file. You can switch that from Quirks mode, which is really pre-IE7, mm-hmm. or pre-IE6, I think. And now you can use Explorer 7 standards mode or 8 standards mode. You can choose them right from here and see what the differences are and how your page is going to render out.
Okay. One word. Wow.
Lots of stuff.
How about that? Nice.
Now what I'm going to do is close the toolbar, because I said it was page dependent. And I'm going to open up a different page, and I'm going to bring up the toolbar on this page now, and we're going to take a look at the scripting and the profiling. So it turns out that Microsoft doesn't seem to use a whole lot of JavaScript on their pages live, so I had to search around a little bit to find something I could execute. So what we see in script view then is that we can see the actual JavaScript that's on that page. You can see all the JavaScript that's visible on that page, and you can click in this drop-down box and pick any JavaScript file that's being referenced by your site and actually look at it in detail. So if you're using jQuery, for example, you know, it'll show you your jQuery, even though it's packed. You know, usually it's packed, so you get this block of jQuery. But you can actually get down and actually look through that code. And so then in script mode, I can do cool things like set breakpoints. So if I click over here in the column, in the margin, I can set a breakpoint on this particular spot in my page. And when I go and click, and that's actually this features list over here on the side, so if I actually go and click Start Debugging, now if I turn on script debugging in IE Explorer Options, this little pop-up dialog won't come up. But what it'll do then is, if you have it docked, it'll unpin it and put it in a separate window, all right, so that you can actually get a fuller screen view. And then when I click on an element, and we stop at the breakpoint, so you can see that we jump right into the code, and it stops. And if I look in the right-hand column now, we can see that there's a console where I can actually execute JavaScript commands. You know, if I want to put an alert box up or something, I do it right here. There's a breakpoints list where I can control the breakpoints that I have set on the page. And there's a locals view, right? We can see here that there's only one actual sort of variable here, and these other things are actually structures with methods, and you know, that it gives you quite a bit of information about what's on the page. And in the watch window is where I can actually like click here on the selected element and add a watch point. Okay, so now it'll actually watch that particular variable. Even if it's not in scope, it'll show you what happens to the variable, the value of that variable. And there's a call stack out here where I can, you know, if I click there, I can see where it came from, or back to my new slide code. All right. So the very last thing, if I stop debugging here and I go to the Profiler tab, all right, what I can do then is, when I click Start Profiling, it'll start to collect information about what I do on the page. As I click around the page, I can do several things. I can drop down these menus, whatever I want to do. And when I'm finished with that, I pop back to the profiler and click Stop Profiling. And what it does is it gives me a list of all the functions that were called on that page, mm-hmm. with the counts of the times that they were called. So if I want to sort on this maybe and see which function is being called the most times, I can see it at the top. Inclusive time is the amount of time spent in that routine and all of its descendants. The exclusive time is only the time in that particular routine. Again, I can sort on those items so I can see what's taking the most amount of time on the page. I can see the URLs that are actually being looked at, and if I want to, then I can, if I want to find out maybe where this on-click event is, if I double-click right there, it jumps right into the source code in the script page, so I can actually find out where the heck I am in the source. I don't have to go, you know, again, diving down through there and looking for what it is. So there's lots of new features in IE8 toolbar, like the scripting and the profiler page for JavaScript, which we're missing before, and this is basically the do-it-all tool if you're a web developer, and it's one that you you got to have in your toolbox. What do you guys think?
Dan, that's an awesome tool. That's one that I think many of us will use in this room. All right, so now we're going to bring up Jessica, and she's, you know, speaking of profiling that Stan had just done. We're going to go ahead and have Jessica talk about data profiling. So take it away, Jessica. I got the slide up here for you.
Thanks, Russ. We're going to take a look at integration services data profiling. So we talked about earlier about if you have issues with your data, sometimes you have to look at every single row to figure out what the problem is, if there's some sort of abnormality or some sort of outlying data point that's actually happening, and you're trying to figure out where that data point is. That's something that we can use data profiling for, to figure out where that information is. So data profiling actually comes as part of integration services. It's a task within the actual package itself, as well as a data profile viewer that will allow you to see that data, to really get in and interrogate, analyze, and discover information about your existing data. You can go ahead and download this with your as part of your SQL Server toolset. It's going to come as part of that. And really what we're trying to solve here is a number of things. You can use it to prevent your warehouse load from failing. If it has null values that are coming in from your source system, you need to actually figure out where those are and be able to capture them in your actual ETL load. You can also identify new validation rules. We're going to look at a profile which will determine a regular expression that you can use to see if your data is accurate. And then finally, discovering inaccurate or inconsistent values that you have. Actually see what that information is. Finally, you're going to use it by connecting to your SQL Server table. And you can connect to anything greater than SQL Server 2000 to see that information. So let's go ahead and dig into our demo. We go ahead and flip on over there.
I know many times I'm doing app dev, and I'm saying my code is right. The code is right. The code is right. And it's the data, right, that might be causing the problem with you. Maybe there's something unexpected. So this is, I think, what the beauty of this is. So go ahead and show everybody.
What we have here is an integration services project. And this is something that we can create in Visual Studio by going to our File menu, New, and creating a new project. When you install the SQL Server client tools, it installs all of the business intelligence project types for you: integration services, analysis services, and reporting services. What we've created here is an integration services project. We have a package already created for us, and we can go ahead and bring over our data profiling task into our control flow to start setting it up. I'm just double-clicking on that task to open it up, and we'll specify a file connection of where we want to store our profiling data. We're going to store this in a folder I have temporarily on my machine, the tools folder.
Good name.
And we'll call it profile.xml to store our information. Now we can go to the profile request menu and enter in all the different profiling aspects that we want to do to pull our information out. Or we can take the easy way out and go back to the general menu and click the quick profile button to have it create all of them for us. We'll create our connection to our SQL Server database, which is just going to be, we're going to use AdventureWorks for this example. I have it on my local machine, and we're connecting to AdventureWorks Data Warehouse 2008. The table that we're going to select will be DIM Customer. So we're going to look at all the columns that we have in there and see what the data is. It's already selected some profiles for us for default. We'll also select the column pattern profile, because that's an interesting one to look at, and select OK. So now when we go to our profile request menu, we can see all of those profiles that have already been created for us. At this point, we can go into any of those and modify them, change the columns, change the parameters, anything that we want to there. We'll actually go into the pattern profile request and change that. Right now, it's going to try to look at all of the string columns to see if it can come up with a regular expression. And we're going to change that to just use the phone number column. Once we've set that all up, we can just execute that package just as it is. And as it's executing it right now is connecting to a Visual Studio, connecting to SQL Server, querying that table, pulling that information out, and running through all of its information to figure out what the data is actually has any issues with. It's going to store that information into an XML file, which now that the package has completed, which we can see by the green box there, we can go ahead and look at that data by going under our SQL Server 2008 menu. And then under Integration Services folder, we'll click the Data Profile Viewer application. Opening up that XML file that we just created under our CTools folder, we can see we have profile.xml. And over on the left, we can see the data source we connected to, the different servers, databases, and tables. And we actually could have selected different ones there. And then we look at all of the different profile information. We start with our candidate key profile, which is going to tell us what columns will make a unique value, will show the unique value for all of the records in your table. So this is a dimension. So our customer alternate key and our customer key we know are unique. So this actually is accurate. And then the last column that it says is email address, which is actually kind of interesting and may actually tell us that the business considers a new customer based on if they have a different email address. So we get a little bit of insight into the business. Our next profile is our column length distribution, which is going to tell us the number of characters we have in all of the different columns. If we go ahead and sort on our length column, we can see all of those that are listed here. Kind of creates a little bit of a bell curve for us in our counts. And as we scroll through, look at the different columns, if we go to address line 2 and sort on that length, we can see the very first row there that we have one record that has a length of 1. Well, it's kind of an interesting length to have for an address line too. I'd like to actually see what that is. So if we double click on that row, down at the bottom, it's going to actually come up and show us what that exact record is. So we're able to see that in that address line 2 column, all it has is a character C in it.
So that looks kind of suspicious, I would think.
It absolutely.
Just, yeah, that'd be a good point. I mean, this is very analogous to code profiling. For those that have done code profiling, you kind of determine in code profiling, you know, what's being used, what it isn't, you know, how much is it being used, and you can kind of pinpoint in your code where to optimize if you're not hopping out of a loop or whatever. And with data, it's very analogous here. Here, this pinpoints something that might be suspect in terms of maybe the data entry's wrong and it's not capturing and putting an edit in for something like that.
So it's absolutely something we'd want to handle.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Our next profile is going to be our column null ratio, which is going to tell us for each column how many of the records have null values in them. Mm-hmm. So for address line 2, most addresses don't really have a second line. It's usually just one. So we can see that we have 98% of our records do not have an address line 2. Yeah, that makes sense. And if I scroll down to the rest, I can see that middle name also has a lot of null values, and then suffix and title do as well. Now, if those are the only columns that we have in this table that are nulls, then I think we're doing okay. It means the rest of our data is pretty clean, and we've got the values in there as far as nulls go. Our next profile is our column pattern profile. And this is where we selected the phone number column. And we can see that it actually creates regular expressions for us based on the values within that column. For the phone number, it came up with two different patterns. We can see that the first one we have listed has a 1 in front of it, and the second one starts with a few numbers. Double-clicking again, I can drill down into that data, and I can see that the first pattern is associated with the international numbers, versus the second one is for our local United States numbers.
Cool.
Our next profile is going to be our column statistics, which is where we can see for all of the numeric columns we have in our table, what the minimum values are, the maximum values, mean, and standard deviation. If we look at the last column we have here is yearly income. For this data set, the minimum yearly income is going to be $10,000, and then the maximum is $170,000, with a mean of around $57,000. The very first column that we have is our birth date. We can see our minimum value is in 1910, and our maximum is in 1980. Hmm. Now, if we had something where the minimum value was in the 1700s, or maximum value was in 2070, we might have some issues with our data, and we'd need to start taking a look at it. But right now, we can tell that this data has actually got some decent birth dates in it. And then our final profile, which is probably my favorite because I'm a data warehousing person, is being able to find out what the distinct values are within a particular column. So if we go down to our we'll look at our commute distance for this one. We can see all of the distinct values that are listed there, which is all of the different mile combinations. We have from 0 to 1, 2 to 5, etc. And this tells us that every record we have within this dimension will actually fall into one of those ranges. It's going to have that information in the column. So this is a really great way of finding quickly if you have some inaccurate data, if you have types or codes that you have to have all the information for, and you have something that's either somebody fat-fingered something or we don't have very good validation on the front end, we're very easily able to see what those values are.
So no more eyeballing the data, huh?
Hopefully, no more
man,
eyeballing the data.
I don't know about you all, but I feel really tingly inside. That was just awesome, man. Awesome. There you go.
Yeah, so it's just a very quick look at the data profiler task, and you can see how it can really be powerful and really help you when you're looking at your data.
All right, thanks a lot. Give it up for Jessica Moss. Okay, so we're going to wrap up the show as we usually do with community development highlights, and what's going on is also very important to, you know, keep the pulse on what's going on in the industry. So we have Don here, so go ahead and give us the highlights. Don, go right ahead.
So the highlights is obviously you want to go out and go check out some of the other videos that we have for the Tool Shed, episode number 1 and number 2. They're out there.
What a good way to lead in.
You got to drive that community right to the site. That's great. You also check out the 10-4 series that's out there on Studio 10. We all know that Studio 10 is going to be coming out shortly. Also check out Continuum, the Silverlight Dev site, and GeekSpeak. And upcoming conferences, you can always go to MSDN events for nationwide nationwide info. Info on roadshows, fire starters, that's msdnevents.com. SQL Saturday down here also in Florida. They're going to have one in South Florida on August 8th, and you can go to SQLSaturday.com to go find out about that event and other SQL Saturday events throughout the nation. And my most favorite,
got that right,
important event is PDC 09. They have a save the date. There's no link there to do registration yet, but they would like you to be able to save the dates of November 17th through the 20th.
We get a choice where I work, going to two conferences a year. And PDC is always my
mine would be PDC and that's PDC.
That's it.
And Thrive. Thrive is the new My Skills site that Microsoft has put out there to help position yourself in these tough economic times. Obviously, you want to be able to try to recession-proof your resume and recession-proof your job skills as much as possible. So you can always hit Microsoft.com/ThriveDev. And go check out some of the sources that they have there to help drive your community and drive your skills. And going to events like this and watching videos like this is great opportunities.
And this is brand new, by the way, brand new. So go check that out.
And we also have Ramp Up, which if you want to continue your skills and learn some new things, you can go to msdn.com/rampup. And they've got discounts there for MS Press training kits and certification exams. And we would like to do a shout out to the Pensacola SQL Server User Group. And you can get them at pensacolasql.com. And up on July 23rd, they have Eric speaking on geocaching. And Tallahassee.net, there you can go to capitalcity.net.net. On September 5th, they're actually going to be doing a code camp. Labor Day weekend. What a crazy day to pick a...
That's Tallahassee for you. A lot of crazy guys in the audience here from Tallahassee.
And then Jacksonville, of course. We got to shout out to those guys. They've got an ARC SIG. You can go see that. And they are also having a code camp the week before. And you can also get the SouthwestFlorida.net users group down there in Naples, Fort Myers. And you can go to that site, swfldev.net, and they have a code camp on October the 3rd.
So the bottom here line here is lots of code camps in Florida.
It's a big state, as I found out.
Yeah.
And then where do you go to find out about this stuff? I definitely encourage you to go to communitymegaphone.com, which is the DPEs down on the East Coast are trying to use that as a great area to shout out all the events that you might be interested in. Definitely participate in your local user groups. Obviously, that's a big thing for me. Go to CodeZone. Subscribe to Flash on msdn.com, so that this way you'll be notified by your local DE about anything in your geographic area. And you can also go to the events and get to know your developer evangelists, and then get to know your MVPs.
Yeah, that's it.
And BizSpark, you can find out a little bit more about BizSpark at Microsoft.com/BizSpark. It's a free startup, a free software for startups. And DreamSpark is something similar, but for high school and college kids. And if you need any information, obviously come here. The Russ's Tool Shed, DevFish, Buffer Overrun,
Jeff Barnes' site,
my site, and Jessica's site.
So, I think we're about done. I want to thank you, Don. That's a great job for coming on up. Come on up, Stan. And I think we're all done today. How about that? Was that all right? Thank you for coming, everybody.
Connectivity 56k, just don't cut it no more. Want a big pipe carrying 200 megabits of pure excitement right to my door. Got an SUV with six-wheel drive with 300 horses. I'm never deprived. Infrared sensors for climate control. Zero to warp speed and ready to roll. Cause I'm a toy boy out on the fringe. And he who dies with the most toys wins.